Hello, this is Utah Phillips, the golden voice of the great Southwest, and once again you're listening to Loafer's Glory, the hobo jungle of the mind. Selecting a reader. First, I would have her be beautiful and walking carefully up on my poetry at the loneliest moment of an afternoon, her hair still damp at the neck from washing it. She would be wearing a raincoat, an old one, dirty from not having money enough for the cleaners. She will take out her glasses, and there in the bookstore she will thumb over my poems, then put the book back upon its shelf. She will say to herself, "For that kind of money I can get my raincoat cleaned," and she will. Well, yep, it's Utah Phillips back again with you, and of course that's that poem is by Ted Cooser. It's a wonderful, wonderful poem. This is going to be a program of spoken word, of poetry, and I'm here with Steve Baker, who's doing the engineering. Steve is on his way to Britain here next week. He's going to fly over to keep a 20th anniversary rendezvous with old friends in London. Now, Steve, I'm not going to ask you to bring me anything big and bulky. Maybe you could go to Portobello Road and bring me a mushroom. But no, you can't bring me fish and chips wrapped in a newspaper, but you can bring me the newspaper. Newspaper streaked with grease, because then I could hold it and I could smell it. Will you do that for me, please? Wow. Where am I? Oh, yeah. We're here in Nevada City. Nevada City, California. We have just waded once again through the morass of an election. And now we're headed toward the final run. I'd like to remind you of words relevant to that Oscar Ammeringer said in the last century. He said, "Politicians get votes from the poor and money from the rich on the guarantee to protect each from the other." And if that doesn't cinch it, well, remember Lucy Parsons, one of the founders of the Industrial Workers of the World. Lucy Parsons, the 1905 founding convention of the Wobbly, stood up and said, "Never be deceived that the rich will permit you to vote away their wealth." Now, here we are nonetheless, headed toward an election. We have a choice, once again, between the evil of two lessers. We're here at radio station KVMR, our community radio station, the jewel in the crown of the Sierra. Oh, listen, you should have been here for our election night coverage. It was throwing trouble on oiled waters. Spoken word. I remember Fort Monmouth, New Jersey. It was in the early 50s. I was in the Army. My God, I joined up. Some people learn things the hard way, and I'm one of them, but then you never forget it. I was in radar school. Radar school requires some mathematical acumen, which I do not possess. It's all I can do to count in the proper sequence. As a matter of fact, that's why I got pipelined to Korea. It wasn't their mistake. It was my incompetence. I spent most of my time in those classes making up poetry. Now, there were some really good musicians over there at the service club at Fort Monmouth that played jazz. And, of course, that was a time when poets like Kerouac and others were reciting to jazz. So we did a show at that club with Sylvius Flynn playing the piano. We had a drummer, and I did a long poem called 30 Years in the Big House by B. Jones, B. Jones, B. Jones, B. Jones. I still have that. Someday I'll get up the courage to do it again. But I want to play some music or some poetry for you. Some of it from the past, some of it done with musical backgrounds. And let's start out with some animal poems, since we're memorializing the death of an old friend of our family, Annie Animal. This one from Lawrence Ferlinghetti. I think this was recorded lately in 1999, if I'm not mistaken. But listen to Lawrence Ferlinghetti and Dog.
Dog. The dog trots freely in the street and sees reality. And the things he sees are bigger than himself. And the things he sees are his reality. Drunks in doorways, moons on trees. dog trots freely through the street, and the things he sees are smaller than himself. Fish on newsprint, ants in holes, chickens in Chinatown windows, their heads a block away. The dog trots freely in the street, and the things he smells smell something like himself. The dog trots freely in the street, past puddles and babies, cats and cigars, pool rooms and policemen. He doesn't hate cops, he merely has no use for them. He goes past them and past the dead cows hung a pole in front of the San Francisco meat market. He would rather eat a tundra cow than a tough policeman, though either might do. And he goes past the Romeo Ravioli factory and past Coit's Tower and past Congressman Doyle of the Un-American Committee. He's afraid of Coit's Tower, but he's not afraid of Congressman Doyle, although what he hears is very discouraging, very depressing, very absurd to a sad young dog like himself, to a serious dog like himself. But he has his own free world to live in, his own fleas to eat. He will not be muzzled. Congressman Doyle is just another fire hydrant to him. The dog trots freely in the street and has his own dog's life to live and to think about and to reflect upon, touching and tasting and testing everything, investigating everything without benefit of perjury. A real realist with a real tale to tell and a real tale to tell it with. A real live barking democratic dog engaged in real free enterprise with something to say about ontology, something to say about reality and how to see it and how to hear it. With his head cocked sideways at street corners as if he is always just about to have his picture taken for Victor Records, listening for his master's voice, and looking like a living question mark into the great gramophone of puzzling existence with its wondrous hollow horn, which always seems just about to spout forth some victorious answer to everything.
Lawrence Ferlinghetti, the daddy of it all. Remember going down to interview a storyteller there in the little town of Washington, California, at the bottom of the long, windy downhill road. A fellow named Jorgensen sitting up on the porch there at the Washington Hotel and Bar. I approached him. There was a dog sunning himself at his feet. I've been shy of dogs most of my life. I approached the porch and said, "Hey, Mr. Jorgensen, does your dog bite?" He said, "No, it doesn't." Well, I walked up on the porch. That dog flew at me, took a big bite right out of my calf. I said, "Hell, I thought you told me your dog doesn't bite." He said, "Well, mine doesn't, but that one there does." Well, I met an interesting fella from England over at the Folk Alliance here a couple of weeks ago by the name of Les Barker. Interesting little guy, an ingenious poet, a participatory poet. He will let the audience anticipate his rhymes, and they will intone them simultaneously. Let's listen to Les Barker about another animal, the phoenix.
"My house has just burnt down. Somebody pass the Kleenex. I know what started it off. I bought a homing phoenix. It's very nice to look at. Nicer than pigeons. It's just a shame that when it gets home it has to spontaneously combust. It was all in the name of science I purchased this wrist to my health. I wanted to mate it with a hen and get a chicken that cooks itself. I know that I have been foolish. I know that you, had you been I, would never have looked beyond pigeons. No way would you have kept Feni. I shouldn't have meddled with nature. I shouldn't have been such a smarty. All I've got's a bird that comes home and starts its own housewarming party. Robert's his name. I just call him. Robert, I cry. He returns. Why do I call him Robert, you ask? Because when he gets home, Robert Burns. He won't go away, no migrating in search of sunnier climes. There's no way to get rid of Robert. I've had him cremated 6 times. How does the pigeon find home? Oft it's the loft he remembers. The dove makes a note of his coat. But the phoenix remembers the embers.
Les Barker also records from Britain with Mrs. Aykroyd's band. I don't know if you're able to find those records around much. I've got a small collection of mainly that I picked up from Les Barker when I run into him here and there. Well, now this election season here has seen any number of initiatives on the ballot here in California. We legislate by initiative here, which means that things can get kind of erratic. We had an initiative on the ballot here, Proposition 22, about same-sex marriage. Defining marriage as only between a man and a woman. It was just your usual gay bashing stuff that goes on around here. The damn thing passed, too. So let's do something memorializing that. You know, I got an idea. Here's an idea. See if you can get behind this. We're dealing with the problem of abortion, of contraception, of abuses of all sort, population control. I want to sponsor an initiative for no-sex marriage. It would solve all those problems. We'd even have to talk about them anymore. So anybody want to get behind the idea of a no-sex marriage? Look, even the fundamentalists can't object to that. Celibacy has a long history in Christianity, understand? Well, we would just lay off that for a while and really get to know each other for a change, all right? You call up the station. Let us know if you'd like to back a measure for no sex marriage. Let's listen to, on that exact subject, by the way, Lenny Bruce, his Psychopathia Sexualis.
Poetry and jazz. Psychopathia Sexualis. I'm in love with a horse that comes from Dallas. Poor neurotica me. When my family found out, they raised the roof, 'cause I bought a ring to fit her hoof. Poor brain, the size of a pea. She looks so nice against the rail, with her pretty long legs and her ponytail. I guess against convention I'll never win. I'll probably end up in the loony bin, but in my heart I'll always be free. The head shrinker said my societal concept had been warped by an Oedipus Rex, which caused me to hate the opposite sex. But what he doesn't know is that my second wife was a 10-pound goose named Tex. I'm paranoid and sublimated, in love with a horse that ain't been spaded. Traumatic scene, please let me be. I've been hypnotized, tranquilized, analyzed, rationalized, taking every pill from Seconal to Dexamil. Sitting with my wife, necking in the dark, and knowing her ex-lovers are running at Hollywood Park. Can be a bug, I will admit, but it's all made up when I see her running around the house in a negligee, brace and bit. Like most young couples, we had our fights, deciding what's fair about her rights. We finally got adjusted and I was boss, when I woke one morning and on a lawn I found a fiery cross. The Ku Klux Klan said we had to get out that day. Move everything, lock, stock, horse and carriage. The Klan wouldn't stand for no mixed marriage, so I'm feeling blue. Ain't got a penny in my pocket. We're gonna volunteer for a satellite rocket, so me and her can sit and spoon and visit my first wife who jumped over the moon. Poetry and all that jazz.
Oh, Lenny Bruce. there's a voice out of the past. It's just as belongs right here today. Folk poetry. The hell is folk poetry? What is folk anything? I assert and will maintain that the minute you define anything as folk art, you simultaneously announce the demise of the culture that created it. folk what? I agree with Jim Whistler, the painter, or Eric Gill in Britain, that make no distinction between art and craft, none at all. What was it, Jim Whistler pointed out that you dig up from a Greek grave, a Greek tomb, a beautiful cup with a wonderful glazed dolphin swimming around the inside, and put it in a museum of fine art as an example of fine Greek art. And he says, hell, in Greece they drank out of the things. Sometimes they even dropped them on the floor. So, you know, what's the difference between art and craft? Anyway, we're going to listen to some poetry that grows up from the grassroots right from the bottom up. Buzz Potter is the founder of the National Hobo Association, of which I'm a proud member. Rode every freight train, east and west, a booming construction worker all the way from Dutch John up in the Uinta Mountains there, putting in the Flaming Gorge Dam, all the way down to Nicaragua, heavy equipment operator. Let's listen to him doing one of his poems, The Crunch of the Shack.
It was long after dark and the wind had died down as we stood by the tracks on the west side of town. The train we were watching was soon scheduled out, westbound for Ogden on the Overland route. So we found a clean empty and heaved up our gear. They were pumping the air, our departure was near. We rolled some Bull Durham I had in my pack, and faintly we heard it, the crunch of the shack. He's really a brakeman, he rides in the hack. The hobos respect him, they call him the shack. You'll see him out there in the sun or the rain before each departure, inspecting the train. With his brake club and lantern, he walks down the line, crunching the gravel one step at a time. No sound chills a hobo or takes him aback, like those stone-grinding footsteps, the crunch of the shack. We're huddled in hiding, awaiting the sound of the highball, the whistle that says we're outbound. But the highball is late, and all that we hear is a far-off shuffling that wakens our fear. A lantern is bobbing its way up the track. We soon hear the footsteps, the crunch of the shack. So hunker down, boys, and don't make a sound. He doesn't like hobos, and he's making his rounds. Boys, don't even whisper. He's right by the door. The lantern light dances on the smooth wooden floor. From corner to corner, he swings the bright light. We're hidden by shadows just out of his sight. One sudden movement, a sneeze or a cough, would lead him right to us and he'd order us off. They'd pinch us for sure and we'd never make bail. We'd all draw some time in that Laramie jail. It seems like forever when the light disappears. We all breathe a sigh, forgetting our fears. We can still hear his footsteps echoing back. The boots on the ballast, the crunch of the shack. Then soon comes the highball, they're bunching the slack. The train surges forward and they're sanding the track. We roll more tobacco and break out the wine and toast our good fortune on the Uncle Pete line.
Buzz Potter, The Crunch of the Shack. He publishes the Hobo Times. There's also a website for... tramps have a website now. You know that? There's a whole new technology among trampdom. There are scanners, you know, so you can pick up the signals from the head end. There's infrared goggles, army surplus from the former Soviet Union that can use to spot the empties at night. Tramps getting... setting up email addresses at the public libraries. Hey, it's... the world changes. Yeah, Buzz Potter. Now, here's another fella. It's a friend of mine, Greg Giorgio, in Albany, New York, fellow worker in the IWW. He works for the Racing Commission in New York State. I think he touts the odds up there in their office. I'm not quite sure what he does. Nonetheless, he wrote a poem about Big Bill Haywood. Now, of course, Haywood was a great speaker. He's one of the founders of the IWW after 1905, and he was always getting busted when they passed the Espionage Act in 1917, when we entered the First World War. The cops would follow him around from one speaking engagement to the next, saying if he says anything seditious, he's to be arrested immediately. Well, here's a poem about him speaking in Albany, New York. Greg Giorgio, he's speaking in the park.
He's speaking in the square tonight, come to talk about the workers' plight. They say he's come to set us right,
teach us to join together and fight for what we've earned, how we must learn this world we've made is ours to own. This world we've made is ours to own. Well, when we arrived at the square, 5,000 people were all waiting there. Swedes, Poles, Germans, Finns, Irish, and Italians. How could such a mix of folks understand the words he spoke, or hope to know what the man was thinking? Fellow workers, he shouted, and the crowd exploded. They could feel the message from his tone and thoughtful expression. He twirled his hat and raised his brow, ever wondering how those who work got nothing, while all went to those who shirk. We will do it, he said, when we have learned. Organize, organize, one big union. His voice boomed across the town. Now world labor needs a world union to fight capital's intrusion into every land. Come on, come on, he pleaded. Your might is sorely needed. Come on, won't you lend a hand? And he held out a mighty fist to teach a lesson that was surely missed, a simple lesson in solidarity. You see this hand, fingers spread out wide? Weak, he said, then closed it tight. This is our strength when we organize. Bravo and yah came the cheers and shouts. Working folks could see their way out of the poverty and want from wage slavery. This is the time, they heard him say, and if you want a raise in pay, well then join together, form the committee, your freedoms in your true similarity. For the bosses divide you, they berate and deride you, fighting one another, that's the way they choose, but choose for yourself this time. Break free of the lies and the crime that teaches salvation at the ballot box. The politician is but a thief. He serves the ruling class elite, then tells you he's a friend of the working man. And he who would steal the life of a child is a lowly snake to be reviled. Cast him off and let yourself be free. Break these chains and make your stand against the evil monster close at hand, with the offer of a job breeding misery. Bill! Bill! Came the cries. The people saw through the lies now that they had heard the mighty truth. He left the stage and made his way, and mothers wept and held their babes for him to hug and toss in the air. Big Bill Haywood was his name, and we were grateful that he came. Yes, Bill Haywood was his name. It happened many, many years ago, and he's long gone, but never to be forgotten. Big Bill, they fought and jailed you, taunted and derailed you at every turn and every opportunity. But truth is everlasting. The day it comes so fast, we must learn to fight and live on in your name. He's speaking in the square tonight, come to talk about the workers' plight. They say he's come to set us right, teach us to join together and fight for what we've earned, how we must learn. This world we've made is ours to own. This world we've made is ours to own.
Greg Giorgio, fellow worker Giorgio there in Albany, New York. That's poetry in a classic mode. You go back to the founding of the Union, and that's a style that's persisted up into our times, I think, as Greg just demonstrated. Well, now I'll give you a little piece before we go into the intermission music of my own doggerel. If Genghis Khan wrote poetry, would it be mongrel? A friend of mine, Bill Olson, when I was living up in Spokane, Washington, saw that I was living under considerable stress, decided that I would mellow out if he taught me fly fishing. Took me up on the North Fork of the Coeur d'Alene River, and he showed me how you get into a bend of the river and reach down and muck around on the bottom with your hand and see if their caddis are out. If the caddis larvae are down there in their little houses that they construct out of sand, well, then they'll feed off of the caddis. I decided to get a jump on him and go back to the library and read up on the life cycle of the caddis, and I did, and I found they were good, more complicated than I had been told or thought, so I wrote this poem for them. It's called The Old Guy Gives Up Fly Fishing and Becomes a Devil Worshipper. I didn't learn fly fishing to find God. I gave up fly fishing so God could find me. Bill said, learn fly fishing. It's relaxing. Wilderness, sunlight, quiet, cast and reel, bamboo and brass, that's the ticket, wicker creel. Tie your fly on a barbless hook, root the bottom. Look, that's a caddis. They'll bite on a caddis. Now, these caddis larvae, it says here in the book, build houses with screen doors, live in villages, raid each other, give them new sand to build with, they do it. Break their houses, they do it again, better. Wrapped up inside, they grow, pop their shacks into rafts, float up, dry off, fly away, and start all over again. So, this big white thing, with one eye on the sparrow, drops down through the slow water, roots around. Well, there goes Cleveland, Boise, Spokane. Hell, a caddis don't know wilderness sunlight, Barbless Hook neither. But the big fisherman, I think this is some fine mystery. Suppose the caddis is to me like I am to God. What's God want mucking on my bottom here? Well, I just don't know. But I do know I don't want to jerk around a bunch of caddis anymore. And meaning no disrespect, I sure do hope that something out there is jerking God around, because that's the only way I'll ever find out who I am. Maybe I'll become a devil worshiper. Not reborn, repossessed. Down in Fresno, city of magic, city of light. When I lived up in the Northwest, I used to hang out with some buckskinners, and some of them really fine people, fine, hard-working people. Buckskinners, I mean, with smoke poles, black powder shooters, you understand, would go to the primitive rendezvous over there in Montana. Primitive rendezvous, I guess there isn't anything in that camp that comes after 1830. Means you got to chew the skins, make your own clothes, sew together your buckskins. Use all of those Native American, all those Indian skills to make all those things, including making your own smoke pole, your own flintlock. I bailed out on that, though, after a while. You know, I got tired of seeing the Native ways in practice over at the rendezvous, and then on the way back from the rendezvous, stop off at the Jonky Jaw Bar in Sandpoint, see the same guy dressed up in his Indian garb, get in there and knock an Indian off a bar stool saying, "You can't drink in here with me." So it occurred to me they were dealing with two different kinds of Indian, one highly mythical and one, in fact, they didn't want to be around, you see, so I couldn't take the racism that went along with it. And nonetheless, there were many a good party and many a good time at those rendezvous. And always somebody stood up and recited from the poetry of Robert W. Service, using that heavy cadence as the poetry scans out an old story measure or old song measure. Well, nobody ever did or ever heard the shooting of Dan McGrew better than is done by Robert W. Service himself. Now, this is Bob Service as an old man doing his own poem. This is 9.5 minutes long, all right? So you sit still, put your ear up to the radio, and listen to a crackerjack tale.
Well, you see, it was just like this. A bunch of the boys was a-hootin' it up in this here Malamute Saloon. The kid that handles the music box, he was hitting a jag-time tune. Back of the bar in a solo game was Dangerous Dan McGrew, while watching his luck was his lady love, yon lady that's known as Lou. When out of the night that was 60 below, And into the din and the glare there stumbles a miner, fresh from the creeks. Dog dirty and loaded for bear. Say, he looked like a man wi' a foot in the grave, and scarcely the strength o' louse. Yet he tilted his poker dust on the barn. He calls for drinks for the house. There was no one could place the stranger's face, though we searched our heads for a clue. But we drank his health. And the last to drink was Dangerous Dan McGrew. You know, there's men that somehow just grip your eyes and hold them hard like a spell. And sich was he. And say, he looked to me like a man that lived in hell, with a face most hair, and the dreary stare a dog whose day's done, as he poured himself slugs of barbed wire hooch, and he drowned them one by one. I got a wondering who he was, and a figuring what he'd do, and I turned me head, and there, a watching him, was yon lady that's known as Lou. Well, his eyes went a-rubbering round the room, and he seemed in a kind of daze, till at last that old piano fell in the way his wandering gaze. The ragtime kid was having a drink. There was no one there on the stool, so the stranger, he just stumbles across the room, and he flops down there like a fool, in a buckskin shirt that was glazed with dirt. He sat, and I saw him sway, then he clutched the keys with his grimy hands. My God! But that man could play. Say, was you ever out in the great alone when the moon was awful clear, when the icy mountains hemmed you in with your silence you most could hear, with only the howl of the timber wolf? And you camped there in the cold, a half-dead thing in a stark dead world, clean mad for the muck called gold, while high overhead, green, yellow, red, the north lights swept in bars. Then you've a hunch what that music meant. Hunger and night and the stars. And hunger, not to the belly kind that you banish with bacon and beans. No, the gnawing hunger of home, lonely men, for a home and all it means, for a fireside far from the cares that are, just four walls, a roof above, but oh so crammed full of cozy joy, and crowned with a woman's love. A woman dearer than all the world, and true as heaven's true. God, how ghastly she looks through a ruche, yon lady that's known as Lou. Then, on a sudden, the music changed. So soft you scarce could hear. But oh, you felt that your life had been looted clean, all it once held dear. That someone had stolen the woman you loved. That her love was a devil's lie. That your guts was gone, and the best for you was to crawl away and die. Well, the music almost faded out. Then it burst like a pent-up flood, and it seemed to say, repay, repay. And my eyes was blind with blood, and I thought of a man that done me wrong, and it stung like a frozen lash, and the lust awoke to kill, to kill. Then the music stopped with a crash, and the stranger turned, and his eyes they burned in a most peculiar way. In a buckskin shirt that was glazed with dirt, he sat, and I saw him sway, and his lips went in a kind of grin, and he spoke, and his voice was calm. And, boys, says he, you don't know me, and none of you cares a damn, but I want to state and my words are straight, and I'll bet my poke they're true. And one of you is a hound of hell, and that one is Dan McGrew. Then I ducked my head and the lights went out. Two guns blazed in the dark. A woman screamed. The lights went up. Two men lay stiff and stark. Pitched on his head, pump full of lead, was Dangerous Dan McGrew. While the man from the creeks, he lay clutched to the breast. Yon lady that's known as Lou. Well, them's just the simple facts of the case, and I guess I ought to know. Oh, they say the stranger was crazed with hooch. I'm not denying it so. I ain't so wise as them lawyer guys. But strictly between us two, the woman that cursed him pinched his pork. Yon lady that's known as Lou.
Oh, let's just let that sit for a minute, all right? My God, that does it, doesn't it? Well, let's go on. The revolutionary poets. Pinochet. Pinochet is back in Chile. I'm not sure how I feel. Well, yes, I do know how I feel about these amnesties in Guatemala at the end of the revolution, or in Argentina after the military dictatorship, in El Salvador after El Mazote. The amnesties mean ostensibly peace, but they also mean, as described by a woman in Argentina, that she could be shopping in a grocery store and see her rapist shopping one aisle over and not be able to do anything about it. Pinochet. Let's listen to a poem by Tomas Borges, recited by Joanna Robinson, a revolutionary poet from Nicaragua. Then a bit of the martyred folk singer Victor Jara from El Salvador. Then Pete Seeger telling you a story. and he'll recite to you Victor Hara's last poem.
My personal revenge will be the right of our children in the schools and the gardens. My personal revenge will be to give you this song which has flourished without panic. My personal revenge will be to show you the kindness in the eyes of my people, who have always fought relentlessly in battle and been generous and firm in victory. My personal revenge will be to tell you good morning on a street without beggars or homeless, when instead of jailing you, I suggest you shake away the sadness there that blinds you. And when you, who have applied your hands in torture, are unable to look up at what surrounds you, my personal revenge will be to give you these hands that once you so mistreated, but failed to take away their tenderness. It was the people who hated you the most when rage became the language of their song, and underneath the skin of this town today, its heart has been scarred forevermore. And underneath the skin of this town today, red and black, its heart has been scarred forevermore.
Carne de yugo ha nacido, más humillado que bello, con el cuello perseguido. Por el yugo, para el cuello, empieza a vivir y empieza a morir de punta a punta, levantando la corteza.
Down in Santiago, Chile, there was a great young songwriter, 37 years old, Victor Jara was his name, very popular there. And when the generals took over, he was arrested, he was tortured, took him to the soccer stadium, and there he started singing to keep up the spirits of the other prisoners. The guards told him to stop, and he didn't stop, so they whammed down with his rifle butts, they crushed his arms, broke them both at the wrists. And then they later beat him over the head and shot him. But Victor Jara, he wrote a lot of songs. They're all through, not only Chile, but the rest of Latin America. They don't get sung out in the open now. They don't get, but the song's getting around. I wish I knew one of them to sing for you. I can't sing Spanish that well, but just this afternoon, I got the translation of the last poem he wrote. He was actually, It was the morning of the day that he was shot, and he wrote this verse on a small scrap of paper, and somehow it was smuggled out. We are 5,000 here in this little part of the sky. We are 5,000. How many more shall we be? In the whole city, in the whole country, 10,000 hands which can seed the fields, make run the factories. How much humanity with hunger now, cold, panic, pain and terror. Six of us are now lost in space among the stars. One dead, one beaten, like I never knew a human being could be beaten. The other four wanting to die, wanting to leave all the terror, beating their heads against the wall. The military carry out their plans with precision. The blood is like medals for them. Slaughter is the badge of their heroism. Is this the world you created, oh my God, in 7 days? The blood of compañero presidente is stronger than bombs. Oh, you song, you come out so badly when I must sing. The terror, what I see, I never saw. What I have felt, what I feel.
Hay canto que mal me sales. Hay canto que mal me sales.
To plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nubs. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on report from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on the rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Green Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry Arm, woman liberationist, and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
Gil Scott-Heron, this revolution will not be televised. Well, we're coming down to the end of this. The spoken word. English is such a musical language. I've told you before when I was in Korea, the young Korean that was working in our compound told me that the first time he heard English spoken, he thought that we were singing. It's probably right. Let's finish up with something that I made, again out of a classical mold, just like fellow worker Giorgio. So many of the people that I've met on the skid, so many of the people that I've found sleeping in the doorways under the railroad bridges, are not broken people. Well, in a way they are. They're people who are just slow, just naturally slow. People that, if they had been born 100 years ago in a farm community, could have worked for the cooper, could have worked for the drayer, could have even had a little farm, even gotten married, had kids. Everybody would have known that they were slow, and they might have been the butt of a joke, but at least they'd be living among their own people. Well, you know, those jobs ran out, and they gave us technology. But we still create people who are just slower than the rest of us, who can't keep up. And those are the ones that get sifted down and sifted down onto the skids. Wrote a poem for them, by one of them. Wrote it in the style of Arturo Giovannitti, a great Italian poet and immigrant. Of course, here he was just treated as another dumb Italian. He was put on trial for his life during the Lawrence textile strike of 1912. But I always admire the power of the way that he went at our language. Coffee Ann. Coffee Ann is a short for the hobo slang for coffee and a donut, which is what you get when you go into the mission to get out of the cold. A new conglomerate was born today. You decided that through cooperation there was a better way to make money. A new commune was born today. You decided that through cooperation there was a better way to beat the corporations. A new committee was born today. You decided that through cooperation there was a better way to hide poverty. A new union was born today. You decided that through cooperation there was a better way to win back the wealth you have created. But in all of this, dare to struggle, dare to win, there are some of us who don't know how to do it. Why? Hell, you made us, you tell us why. Your wealth is in money or each other. Mine is in myself. But why is your voice, O loud and holy struggle, only for your own, while the enemy has power to hurt us all? As in the past, some of us were merely dumb. We could have shooed hooves, driven spikes, felled trees. Once on a struggle more than half a century gone, we could have told you a true vision of our dumb and common selves. But you drove us past limits defined by no other logic than your own, in unnumbered infernos of your righteousness. O bankers, O leaders, O teachers, O revolutionaries, we failed, and we failed again. We wanted jobs that we could do, and you gave us technology. That was your supreme and religious mystery, and we were tin woodmen supplicating at the throne of mighty Oz, where you rewarded our need with one more holy lie. Now, some of us, cripples, misfits, ranters without poetry or song, some of us are put outside of you. Listen, will you give us a place where we can fail with some grace? Will you give us a space for our lives, hurt only our lives, hurt only ourselves, where our delusions go unchallenged? You, who despise contradiction and arm with it, wage war among your peers. These are old delusions, harmless, worn, and we don't mean them to cost you any money. Permit our lives to be fantastic. Permit our coin to be madness. Will you leave us a place of our own in which to spend it? Can you find the courage to spare us the shame of losing in a world where winning may be more shameful still? An edge? Can you spare just a slender edge? A neighborhood? A street? An alley? A doorway? My God, you made us. Now leave us alone. Thank you for being with us once again for Loafer's Glory, the hobo jungle of the mind. This is you, Utah Phillips. Yeah, the golden voice of the great Southwest. From a seventh grade poetry class, the assignment, attack this poem, come into this poem. The response from Marlon Gillen. I don't know like what. I don't know what to write. How is that a poem? You're confusing me, sir. Stop. This is dumb, sir. I hate this. How long is this going to be? This doesn't make sense. Now what do I do? Other people are writing different things down. Why do I have to do it this way? Whoever reads this might think it's dumb. Hold on. Let's see now. What else? This is not an easy poem to come into. This is not an easy poem to get out of.